Jatobo Jendra Bandhane.
Jatobo Jendra Bandhane.
Chakir Shur Bhagavan Asya.
Chakir Shur Bhagavan Asya.
Shama Jind Abhi Yachita.
Shama Jind Abhi Yachita.
Boliye.
Vasudevasya Devakyam.
Vasudevasadevakyam.
Jato Bhojendra Bandhane.
Jato Bhojendra Bandhane.
Shur Bhagavan Asaya.
Chakir Shur Bhagavan Asaya.
Sam Ajendra Abhiyachita.
Sam Ajendra Abhiyachita.
Vasudevasya Devakyam. Jato Bhojendra Bandhane.
Jato Bhojendra Bandhane.
Chakir Shur Bhagavan Asya.
Sam Ajendra Abhiyachita.
Vasudevasya Devakyam.
Jato Bhojendra Bandhane. Chakir Shur Bhagavan Asya. Shamajan Abhi Achitaha.
Vasudevasya Devakyam.
Jato Bhojendra Bandhane.
Jakeshwar Bhagavan Asya.
Shama Jena Abhi Achitaha.
Vasudevasya Devakyam.
Jato Bhojendra Bandhane.
Chakishwar Bhagavan Asya.
Shama Jena Abhi Achitaha.
Margis. Vasudevasya Devakyam. Jato Bhojendra Bandhane. Chakir Shur Bhagavan Asya. Shama Jinda Abhiyachita. Vasudevasya. Of the wife of Vasudev. Devakyam. In the womb of Devaki. Jataha. Born of. Bhojendra. The king of the Bhojas. Bandhane.
In the prison house.
Chakir Shuhu. For doing. Bhagavan. The personality of Godhead. Ashyaha. Of the earth. Sham. Welfare. Ajena.
By Brahma.
Abhiyachitaha. Being prayed for. Translation in purport by Srila Prabhupada. The personality of Godhead, Lord Shri Krishna, being prayed to by Brahma to bring welfare to the earth, was begotten by Vasudev in the womb of Devaki in the prison of the king of Bhoja. Although there is no difference between the Lord's pastimes of appearance and disappearance, the devotees of the Lord do not generally discuss the subject matter of his disappearance. Vidura inquired indirectly from Uddhava about the incident of the Lord's disappearance by asking him to relate Krishna Katha or topics in the history of Lord Krishna. And thus Uddhava began the topics from the very beginning of his appearance as the son of Vasudev and Devaki in the prison of Kamsa, the king of the Bhojas at Mathura. The Lord has no business in this world, but when he is so requested by his devotees like Brahma, he descends on the earth for the welfare of the entire universe. This is stated in Bhagavad Gita 4:8. Paritranaya sadunam vinashaya chaduskritam dharma samstarpanartaya sambhavami yuge yuge. Uddhava has been describing some of the pastimes before this, but it's kind of always in he's always using that as an example of some philosophical principle, like how Krishna's merciful or something like that. But here he's just pretty much just describing the pastimes now. And the meter changes. Before it's this, I don't know what it's called. Manye sharan bhagavatam stridishe. Like that. Now it's changing. Vasudeva sadevakyam. Yeah. Like that. And many times the change in meter denotes a change in the mood. So he's kind of finished, you know, glorifying Krishna intellectually, his position, right? The proper attitude, proper intellectual understanding. And with that fixed, after repeating it a few times and getting the mind that mood, then you can describe the pastimes directly, right? Okay? So now from here on, he'll describe pastimes directly. Vasudevasya devakyam jato bojendra bandhane chakir shura bhagavan nashaha song ajain abhyachitaha tato nanda vrajam ita pitra kongsad vibhibhyata ekadasha samas tatra gurarchi sa balavasat. Thereafter, his father, being afraid of Kamsa, brought him to the cow pastures of Maharaj Nanda. And there he lived for 11 years like a covered flame with his elder brother Baladev. In his childhood, the Almighty Lord was surrounded by cowherd boys and calves. And thus he traveled on the shore of the Jamuna River through gardens densely covered with trees and filled with chirping birds, vibrations of chirping birds. When the Lord displayed his activities just suitable for childhood, he was visible only to the residents of Vrindavan. Sometimes he would cry, and sometimes laugh, just like a child. And while so doing, he would appear like a lion cub. While herding the very beautiful bulls, the Lord, who was a reservoir of all opulence and fortune, used to blow his flute and thus enliven his faithful followers, the cowherd boys. The great wizards who were able to assume any form were engaged with the king of Boja, Kongsa, to kill Krishna. But in the course of his pastimes, the Lord killed them as easily as a child breaks dolls. The inhabitants of Vrindavan were perplexed by great difficulties because a certain portion of Jamuna was poisoned by the chief of reptiles, Kaliya. The Lord chastised the snake within the water and drove him away. And after coming out of the river, he caused the cows to drink the water and proved that the water was again in its natural state. The Supreme Lord Krishna desired to utilize the opulent financial strength of Nanda Maharaj for worship of the cows, and he also wanted to give a lesson to Indra, the king of heaven. Thus he advised his father to perform worship of Go, or the pasturing land and the cows, with the help of learned brahmanas. Var Satindri Bajet Kopad. O Sobravidura, King Indra, his honor having been insulted, poured water incessantly on Vrindavan. And thus the inhabitants of Raja, the land of cows, were greatly distressed. But the compassionate Lord Krishna saved them from danger by this pastime of lifting Govardhan Hill like an umbrella. In the third season of the year, the Lord enjoyed his essential beauty of the assembly of women by gathering them with his pleasing songs in the autumn night, brightened by moonshine. Ah. And that's the end of the chapter. Next is the Lord's pastimes out of Vrindavan. And he continues with the same Leela Smarnam, like that. But before, again, he's describing some of these pastimes with Shishupal and others to show Krishna's qualities. That, so if somebody comes, for example, some guy comes here and starts talking to you about, the Hare Krishna Dham and how to run things and some ideas about developing things, and you say, well, who's that guy? So it's Bill Gates. He's always one of his graduate professors, he was developing some software thing like that. And he had a student named Bill, who told him, he said, oh, professor, if you did this, change it a little bit like this and probably try to promote it like this, it'd probably be a successful product like that, So he thought, was this some graduate student giving me advice like that? So I never did it. But, if I just listened to his advice, I probably could have retired him. By now. So anyway, who is this person? Who is Krishna? What are the qualities that have been described so far? You remember now?
Merciful.
Huh?
He's merciful.
What's the example of that?
Putana.
What else? What else? Putana and?
Shishupal.
Yeah. And?
Dantavata.
Huh? Dantavata. In his remembrance?
What we just did previously.
Yeah. All the soldiers. But they had to be purified first before they could.
Yeah, battle Kurukshetra.
How were they purified?
By seeing Krishna.
Before they could see Krishna. They couldn't see Krishna until they'd been purified by the
arrows
of Arjuna, the acupuncture. Get them all like, you know. And they were purified, and then they could see Krishna. Yeah. So he's very merciful, even to his enemies. Mm-hmm. What's the extreme example of his mercy out of all those? Why that? Why is that?
Because he was given the possession of mother.
Yeah. And she came to give him poison. And so he took the least qualification and gave the greatest reward like that. So what are some other qualifications that I mentioned before? He's remembering. Merciful. Yeah. The three modes of nature, I guess the three worlds, I guess past, present, and future, like that.
And the biggest qualifier, the salila with gopis.
Yeah.
You remembering that also? Yeah, before? Yeah. His qualifications. Oh, yeah. And one thing is that he can't be, he manifests these forms, and they appear like ordinary forms suitable for pastimes in the material world. But it says that one who doesn't possess sufficient pious credits can't see them. So what a quality. Krishna's quality is he's Devadarshan, right? He can only be seen by somebody who has purified himself, either by the mercy of his devotee, Arjuna, shooting arrows in them. And so it says the soldiers, they were just kind of neutral. They were fighting. They weren't really inimical to Krishna. They were appreciating how he was a great warrior and, like that. And so then he went to the spiritual world. Other people like Shishupal and others were inimical to Krishna, and they maybe got liberation into the Brahma Jyoti. But the soldiers who died looking at him got to Swarup City, in the same form as Krishna, imagine his form. So now that he goes, once we appreciate this, who we're actually talking about, they aren't just mythology. I'm making this point. Otherwise, you just take it as myths, as stories, stories, or what's the word, there's a word for it. It means like stories that improve your character, like that, There are many stories that myths to help us become purified, like that. Oh, the sages gave us these myths, about different people, Ram and Krishna, so it'd be exemplary stories so we could, improve our character and act the same way. But they didn't actually exist. You see, there was no writing at that time, and civilized human beings weren't on the earth until about. And human beings weren't on the earth until about 150,000 years ago, and civilized life didn't start until like that. Yeah, but no, we understand these things are actually real. Krishna's actually real. And these pastimes are actually something that happened. And as you actually begin to read these things, they become manifest. Yeah, so this is not ink on paper. This is not ink on paper. This is directly Krishna. So you begin to read these things, it starts to stimulate, broader understanding. One devotee called Chan said they did the kidnapping of Rukmini in Los Angeles. Prabhupada was there, especially for him. And then about halfway through, Prabhupada was getting so enthusiastic, he was like standing up again, screaming, And it's like that. Then he said, and then it says that Krishna took Rukmini onto his chariot like that. But then everybody attacked like that. And then Prabhupada said, but she wasn't a timid girl. She was Kshatriya. So he was busy shooting arrows at their antagonists. She grabbed the reins of the horses, and she was like, driving the horses out like that. Yeah. So Kala Chama was thinking, what? Was that in the Krishna book? Look, it's not in the Krishna book. So maybe some other Shastra, maybe Prabhupada seeing this, It's a fact. He says, Jayananda told us that Prabhupada said, if you just go on chanting Hare Krishna, you'll start seeing pastimes that you never read in any of my books. Like that. So the process is actually revealing. It's so intense, and maybe it's not true, but it's so intense, I don't know what else to call it. So I had a couple points here. Was it a...
His beauty also described.
Oh yeah, before? Okay.
Krishna continues to extend everything compared to his sunshine.
Oh, yeah? Wow. So his qualities. So it says here that he sent great wizards. Great wizards. Kongsa sent different wizards like that. And I was remembering Ayodhyapati. Now, Bhakti Bringamara has told us this story about what you know, because it's kind of curious, because Kongsa was so, you know, these wizards, these guys weren't serving Kongsa out of, you know, out of duty or something, only because he was a bigger demon than they were. You know. And so why didn't he go to Vrindavan, Percy, and just, you know, stomp on Krishna and finish off the business he missed, you know, earlier, right? So the Ayodhyapati said, in Vrindavan they say, the Kongsa did one time, okay, you know, they're going to go there. He went across to Jamuna. And as soon as he crossed the Jamuna from Mathura into Vrindavan to Gokula, Purnamasi saw him. And she's Yoga Maya. She's the unlimited power of the Supreme God. So she saw him and she turned him into an old gopi like that. And she said, "What are you doing, lazy rascal? There's work to be done." So she grabbed him by her ear and just took him off where everybody else is working and made him doing different things. She's been trying to make cow dung patties and stick them on the wall, but they would fall down like that. And all the time, then Purnamasi was coming and twisting his ear and chastising him. He couldn't do anything right. He was burning himself on the cooking stoves and on and on. So finally he thought, this is the most miserable day I've ever had in my life. You know, if I could escape from this witch, I would never come back again. So the second he thought that, she was next to him and said, "You promise?" He said, "I promise." You know, so he was Kongsa again. He pulled up his dhoti and ran across the Jamuna as fast as he could. And never came back to Vrindavan ever again. Yod. Kongsa ki. And then what else?
Actually, he said that she actually grabbed him by the hair and dipped him in the Jamuna.
Oh, yeah?
And he came out of the dhoti.
Okay. Yeah. So that's why he didn't go there. I don't know where it's from. But, you know,
never came back.
Yeah. Purnamasi. Wow.
She also, I think she issued some threat at the end that he would die if he came back.
Oh, okay.
Some kind of thing like that.
Yeah.
She taught him a lesson, and if you ever come back, you'll die as soon as you reach the end of the princess of Vrindavan or something. There's some kind of thing.
Wow. So, I don't know. Yeah, other Puranas also include stories. Yeah, from Krishna Lila. In the Hansa Dutta, it was written by Rupa Goswami before he became Lord Chaitanya. There are many stories of like that, you know, by Acharyas. Yeah. Then the Prabhupada says that the pastimes of Krishna, the pastime places of Krishna, the Goswamis took three sources to find them. One was the scriptures, one was the local tradition, the Vrijbasis, and the third was Sadhu Drishya, their own inspired, you know, transcendental vision like that. Yeah. So it's Vrindavan. There's so many stories in Vrindavan. Yeah. some are kind of odd. Right? Yeah. Yeah. But generally speaking, they have very, you know, kind of strict traditions in some ways about passing things on like that.
Taking the bride of the demigod.
Huh?
Taking the bride of the demigod.
That's mentioned before?
Yeah, that was mentioned, yeah.
Wow. So he's more than all the demigods combined. Of course, to us, I don't know, in India maybe you know the demigods. In America, no one knows demigods. It's like that.
Yeah, because they were praising him that Sunday and said that only Brahma, this is the only perfect person that he made.
Oh, yeah? Oh. Wow. Oh, yeah, they considered his beauty to be the perfect creation of Brahma. Somewhere here. Hare Krishna. Oh yeah. It's another activity. After Krishna fought with Kaliya, then he was very tired and was wet. And so then he went up on top of the hill where later Madan Mohan temple was built. And it's called this, what's it called? Dwadasha?
Yeah.
Or Dasha? Dwadasha Ditya Til. Because the sun became 12 times hotter, you know, to dry him out and warm him up after that. It's very nice. You can look down there and you can see the Jamuna passing down below. It's a very nice hill. So then Sanatana Goswami then built the temple there. Similarly, Radha Govinda temple was built where it is because that's where Krishna has his daily pastimes, like that. We were there last year, one friend, Professor Samaresh Bandopadhyaya, from ancient Indian history and culture, Calcutta University. It was interesting walking with him, you know. He had different experiences. It's very interesting. Many of these people, Indian philosophers and scholars, they've really been, you know, trained by the British system and the European system about what is reality and everything else, and history, like there was no writing before this date and everything else, you know. But then when they started associating with Prabhupada, you know, through his books, through his movement, through his devotees, you know, kind of, you can see sometimes like you see it's like they're waking up. It's like they're shaking their heads, like, you know, like, you know, they had this like 250-year British hypnosis going. You know, they wake up like, wow, this is, I don't have to believe this. Yeah. So he was talking about like, yes, you know, we have our history and we have all these research projects and stuff like that, and very academic. You don't just speculate like a mad. But anyway, they try and find evidence for things. And he said, but also there's also sadhu drisha. You know, the sadhus can also see things. And he told us one time he had a, in his village he had a Durga deity. And every year the fishermen had the right to take her from house to house to certain places, different houses of Brahmins, things like that. And then whatever donations were given to her, they could keep those. That was just something for the poor fishermen. So one year he said he was a boy, maybe like about, I don't know, 11, 12 years old. And the fishermen took her to one house, and then they were going to lift her up, and one of the fishermen started speaking on her behalf. He said, I'm not leaving this house. And the fishermen couldn't lift her. And then she said, the people in this house, they owe me a debt. They have to give me more bangles, more saris, more this and more that. You know, I'm not going until they give it to me. So they tried to lift her, and they couldn't lift her. And the fisherman's talking like this. So then the boys thought the fishermen were just, you know, doing this to get more income. Just saying like this. And so then also they thought, let's create some mischief. So they went to the next house. It was this big, very strong Brahmin. And Puja was all ready. He was waiting. And they said, sir, these fishermen are doing this, you know, this cheating thing. And they're saying that she says this, she won't leave, and pretending they can't lift her. He said, enough of this nonsense. I'll go bring her myself. So he went there and pushed these fishermen out of the way and was going to lift her. And before, you know, maybe one man could carry her, not even as big as he was, and he couldn't lift her like that. He looks a little disturbed. Then Prasad Bandapajaya said he hadn't taken his bath yet, so he didn't want to touch her, but his friends had all bathed, and they said, we'll help you, sir. So they said like five of them, and this guy couldn't lift her. Then he became really, you know, a little frightened. So at that point, this fisherman goes on and says, talking for her, she says, yes. Last year, the head of this house had smallpox, and the lady prayed to me and said that if you cure my husband, I'll give you this, this, and this. And she never gave it to me. I said, the lady goes, ah! I forgot. I'm not trying to cheat you. You know, I'm sorry. I just forgot. I was so happy it was cured. You know, I didn't remember. You know, I asked that. So they gave her all these, you know, gifts they were supposed to give her, and they could carry her. Different experiences like this. So when he came to Vrindavan, you know, finally we had him come there. This last time I was there, I was hosting him. And he came kind of like in this occidental attitude. The Prabodhananda Saraswati, he says, I know many teachers. I know many, many very, you know, very philosophical books. But as far as I'm concerned, there's no book better and there's no teacher better than Vrindavan Dham. Look at the blades of grass in Vrindavan. They don't do anything. But they are supremely pious, and they are the greatest erudite philosophers, like that, you know. So he was there, and I was just amazed, like the influence, just because everything is Krishna, and especially we're taking different programs and stuff like that, you know. But at one point he said that it says in one of the scriptures, he's quoting some Sanskrit, if you bathe in the Jamuna one time, you never have to chant another mantra in your whole life ever again, like that. So he went down the edge of the Jamuna and the Keshi got it very slippery and everything, and really just, you know, kind of risked his life to get some water from the Jamuna put on his head. Then we're coming out, we're walking along the Parikrama path around Vrindavan town, and he was starting to point out the different kinds of bricks and their ages and stuff like that. It was very interesting because, you know, he had this whole, this is from the Gupta age and this is from that and everything else. Wow, interesting. So he came to the Radha Govinda temple, then he started reading these inscriptions on the walls that were put there by Manmohan Singh, whatever it is, you know. And he said there was a big garden around the temple, the Radha Govinda temple. You know, a big garden around it. And many activities like that, you know, cooking and festivals and pujaris. And there was no main highway, you know, with trucks carrying goods. So all these goods were being transported on the Jamuna by these regular, you know, commercial boats like that, I guess, rowing them and sailing and stuff like that. So there was an arrangement every day to distribute something like about 1,000 kilos of rice. It was some enormous number. It was being cooked every day and offered to Govinda and distributed like that every day. So he said everybody would make their plan. Okay, we're going to go from Agra to Delhi or this or that, you know. And so they say, okay, let's try and get to, you know, Radha Govinda Ghat by between 12 and 1. You know, so all these boats would tie up and have prasad there and everything else like that and go on with their work like that. So you can imagine what an incredible place it was of interest and focus like that. It was written down how many, you know, things of rice, what it was at that. Yeah. So all these places before, they built there because before Krishna used to have his daytime pastimes, Astakalya Lila, Astakalya Lila, you know, in there. Yeah. Yep. So the comments, anybody else?
Keep going.
Comes to mind? On a roll. Yeah. No, it's Lila Smarnam.
Yeah. You talk about the Kaliya's pastime.
Oh, yeah.
In Gopal Champu, after the Kaliya pastime, Krishna came out and all the village, Vrajvasi, together were there and giving the new garment, and he sit down and so many food they got.
Oh, yeah.
They eat them and they sing the glory for the whole day and whole night.
Ah. And that night there was a forest fire came? Mm. Yeah, because they didn't, that's why they were there, they were just still there, it was so late, they just take rest here. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also too, again, it gives an example, like, if you have a very nice apple, but you go to put it in the desert in Arizona, and come back and in 1 month or something, you're at, where's my apple? You know? You find this little hard black, you know, rock, you know? And places that are far apart have come together, you know, things get lost in the wrinkles. So what we're seeing now is the Kali Yuga version of Vrindavan, right? So in the Dwarapara Yuga, it was much bigger and finer and full of juice like that, you know? So Kali Yuga was a long way from Vrindavan, from different places like that. That happened when, let's see, Krishna was living in Vrindavan then, or he was living in Gokula? He was living in Vrindavan then, yeah? Actually, you say he was living in Chatikar.
Yeah, Chatikar.
Yeah, which is where the, you know, you go out the main road goes to Agra.
Yeah.
And it's before you, you know, get to turn off the main road and go to Chatikar and then go back to the Jamuna, Vrindavan village. But it's all part of Vrindavan forest.
Yeah. And actually, that's where they first stopped, but then they went down the road towards Govardhan.
Yeah.
It's where they actually stayed for a few years.
Yeah, they went from...
moved into Vrindavan proper.
I think it was where they went, well...
That's where Krishna first started taking out the calves. It was near, closer to Govardhan.
Because Radharani was in Basanti.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is closer to Govardhan. Yeah. And then Nandagaon. And Varsana. Yeah. It's a very nice book now. It's a Brajmanda Parikrama. It was very nice. You go around all these pastimes. Lord Chaitanya was doing all these things. And then the Lila Smarnam becomes very natural because this is the place where the pastime occurred. There's some remnants, some things there. There's some monument. There's, you know, Nanda Bhavan in Gokula, a big temple, and down below there's a place with a grinding mortar where it's supposed to be, and they have a big, you know, grinding mortar. Yeah? So very easy to start thinking about these things, Lila Smarnam. And it's very purifying if you have the proper attitude. You know, becomes, you know, soul wakes up. You know, Devahuti, she was following the yoga given by her son Kapila, and it says in the end she was like a covered fire, or a coconut. You know, if you wait, the pulp becomes free from the husk, the shell, and you can shake it like that. You know, so in the beginning we're absorbing this body, there's so many ways, and everything that happens to the body, right? You know, hits us, you know, like that, because we're absorbing the body. But as you become detached in different ways, giving up different attachments, one after another coming out, then we can use the body. But if anytime we don't want to, then we can just, you know, give it up, right? Like the coconut in the husk. So you see devotees like that, advanced devotees, especially when one time Prabhupada's preaching, and it's a man, it's like, you know, it's in the garden, in Los Angeles, a man sitting there, and he's very, he's argumentative, like that. There's another word for it, fracturous. You know, he's very argumentative like that about things, and he says, well, Swamiji, this and that. And Prabhupada's kind of like, you know, answering his questions, kind of jokingly, but he keeps chanting, you know. And you can see his consciousness is going back and forth. He's like, not getting too involved with this guy like that, you know, coming down like that. And so Lila Smarnam is a very important process, right? Of our smarnam. We have to perfect smarnam. Without perfecting smarnam, you can't get out of the material world. Prabhupada says, first, when you perfect hearing, then you can explain things properly. Right? And as you perfect that, putting it in a nice way, then you can remember Krishna always, you know, by hearing, chanting, sravanam, kirtanam, smarnam. Smarnam goes through different stages. And when you perfect that, Prabhupada says, no more punar janma, no more repeated birth and death. So smarnam, meditation, you know, is we have to do that with the holy, especially in the Kali Yuga with the holy names. Right? Bhagavatam is here, but also especially in the Kali Yugas, so much. You know, through kirtan, through jap, you know, the holy names, like that, a great advantage. Smarnam, so chanting. Right? Yeah. Chanting, hearing, chanting, and this chanting has to come to this point of actually meditation. In the beginning, the smarnam is just to take us, it's an intellectual investigation. You're trying out the chanting, you know. Then when your intelligence becomes satisfied that this is proper, this is what I should be doing, everything else comes around to this, then you can focus. But there's distractions. Okay, so the next level is where you're bringing your mind away from these distractions by chanting. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, using the mantra like that, you're convinced. And the third level is where you actually begin to focus, you know. But it's interrupted at times. You know? Then it becomes uninterrupted. You can always hear your rounds chanting like that. Hare Krishna. You can have smarnam for so many things. Smarnam for the temple construction. You're always absorbed in this, right? But especially in the Kali Yuga, in the holy names, so we're chanting. It's uninterrupted, you know, focus on the holy name. And then it starts to become more intense, right? Intensifies. And then it becomes uninterrupted, intense, and broad. So that everything just starts to fall into relationship with the holy names, right? Anything that comes up, just you know, is all connected like that. You know? And at that point, by unceasing, uninterrupted, anusmriti, you can actually remember who you are. I am a cow. My name is Bosco. I better wake up. You know? Oh, here I am in Vrindavan again. So Uddhava is showing us a nice example of Lila Smarnam. And Konstantin Stanislavski, the famous director of theater, really wonderful, you know, idea and development of, you know, meditation, using the mind. Before I became a devotee, I was involved in psychology. And the improvisational theater techniques, the things they use. So many, one book called Improvisation for the Theater by Viola Spolin. It's going to do its fourth, fifth reprinting. It's all games, you know. For example, so many games to develop all these different skills as an actor. And she says in the very beginning, an actor does his work with his mind, his body, and his words. Exactly the definition of sannyas, right? Dedicating your mind, body, and words to Krishna. So very nice. Basically, they come to the level of Paramatma and really techniques to really come in contact with, you know, the Paramatma, stay inspired with that. And so he said, people don't go to the theater to hear the play. They can stay home and just read it. Much cheaper like that. But you see, oh, Richard Burton or Sir John Gielgud is going to be delivering Hamlet, and I want to get a good seat. It's $175 for a good seat. You know, my wife too. That's $350, well, like that. Why? Everyone's waiting until he comes to this one line: to be or not to be. That is the question. Yeah, so the subtext, what he calls the subtext, what we're calling here the purport, so that's why people go to the theater, to hear the subtext, to hear the meaning like that, the significance. And the actor puts that in and develops it until it comes to that point where he can understand the whole thing. One actress, she was did legitimate stage theater, and she never did a movie, single her whole life, single girl. And so they only have one clip of her actually on tape, recorded. And so she's sitting in front of a table, and there's a camera going, and then she's, the director's behind the camera, you can't see him. Some things on the table. And the director says, Miss Jones, can you just do something for the camera here? She says, okay, So she picks up a hat, puts it on, picks up some pieces of paper, and immediately she's an old lady. She may be at the time about 45 or something, but looked younger like that. But immediately she's an old lady. This thing comes like that. She says, oh, these are pictures, these pieces of paper, of my last, these are photos of my last trip traveling. And we went to Africa and Egypt. And these are pictures of my friend Flo and myself on a camel and this and that, So it goes like that. And then she said, but what actually, Flo passed on a couple of years ago, like that. And I haven't traveled too much in the last few years because a lot of my friends have passed on. There's no one to travel with. And they say you can only see beautiful things through the eyes of someone you love. Like that. So it's a matter of, it's almost less than 1 minute. She created this whole character of this old lady and her bravery, facing her old age alone like that and someone like that. And so she used to do Hamlet, Macbeth. And Macbeth is a very famous play. It's all the Grihastas to study this, especially the administrators. Administrators. Vice president's wife wanted her husband to be president so she could be, the president's wife, So she inspired her husband to kill the president when he was visiting their house. And they did this, the guy's bleeding, and stuff. They tried to get the blood kind of under control. And so it goes on like this. And then finally it all comes out this way and that way in different ways. Very good play. So Lady Macbeth starts having these nightmares where she's walking around and she has this Freudian guilt complex that there's some blood in her sorry, and she can't get it out. One drop of blood, she keeps washing the blood, and just won't get out like that. So the line, famous line is, out, out, damn spot, like that. It won't go away like that, So when this actress was doing this, in live stage things, she was expressing the anguish, the suffering of this poor woman who'd been carried away by her, greed for power. She was expressing it so intensely that people would pass out in the audience. They're just like, the directors told her, lighten up. It's just too heavy. People are just losing consciousness in the audience. And stuff. So this is smarnam. Right? These pastimes, this is how Lord Chaitanya used to read Srimad Bhagavatam. This is a wonderful description of all of Krishna's pastimes. And this may be about 15 minutes, 10 minutes. You can have a whole review of the Krishna book. Right? And certain pastimes, he's mentioning certain pastimes, not other pastimes. What order, what content, like that. And then, to refine your meditation, Prabhupada gives a purport. He gives a subtext, a significance, like that. So you want to make a drama out of this. It'd be a great drama, huh? It'd be a fantastic drama. Like Sunday Feast, something like that. Uddhava meets Vidura, and he starts to describe these things. He's just telling these things like that. But it's just like his recollection is so intense that people in the audience are like, passing out. So, Prabhupada Ki. Yes, sir. Yeah.
It's very essential to read the scriptures because without reading, we can understand. But at the same time, in Srimad Bhagavatam, it says that Sabde Brahmani Nishunato Nanishunayat Parayadi.
Shramatrasya Shramphalohiya Dinami Varakshata, that just by the becoming expert in reading the Vedic literatures but not putting in the practice, it's like maintaining a cow, it doesn't give any milk.
Yeah.
So where should we draw the line, like reading the scripture, but at the same time, if you don't utilize properly the knowledge also, then it's no tangible result can be achieved.
Well, one of the things we're supposed to do in the scriptures, one of the things it says in the scriptures is read the scriptures. Yeah. So just reading them is putting them into practice. Right? In the scriptures it says, read scriptures. Okay, so I do it. In the beginning there may be no effect, you know. Again, because of so many simple activities, you can read them formally, externally, but there's no juice. Actually, I give the example of my friend Bill W., alcoholic, lived in Dallas, right? And he's going to temple every Sunday, eating five plates of prasadam. And the rest of the time he's living in a bar, eating pretzels and whatever, you know. And he was very, very sinful, you know, because of that. But he wasn't really offensive, you know. So he went to but he also I'll get to sukriti. So he didn't want to just go to the temple and eat. Probably could have come just in time for prasadam and didn't want to do it. So he came and sat through the whole sermon and all the hymn singing, like that, you know, the RT and the lecture. And he said he was there for 1 year, 52 kirtans, 52 Sunday feasts, 52, you know, times three plates of prasadam. And finally his mind said,
Bill,
what is it?
Yeah. What are they talking about, Bill?
Yeah. He said, for the first time he actually really began to try and, like, you know, hear intelligently. This is called Shravana Dasha, the stage of acceptance where it actually starts to penetrate, you know. And many of the descriptions of the same thing happening. Kapila Dev tells the yogi, you got the Lord in your heart, fixed in your meditation, forearms, Janardana. So there's no rasa, no bhava, but just keep on meditating. Fixed, 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 fixed. Take a totally dry sponge, put it in water, take it out, still dry, right? Put it in again, take it out. Hold it under there, what happens? Huh? What happens? A dry sponge underwater?
The air removes itself.
Huh?
The air leaves and the water comes in.
But usually you'll see like one place or something starts to get wet first, right? Or something like that. Then it starts to just go. That's how it works. Something. You know, some experience and wow, you know, then something else, you keep going back to that. That kind of experience and stuff. And it starts to expand the whole thing. Wakes up, you know. Shrimpatana Swakata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtanaha. So he's coming, he's doing it. He's being a good person, just hearing. So the hearing in itself is sufficient. But if you also engage in karma yoga, you know, doing whatever you can, probably says, do whatever you can do for Krishna nicely, not dog hard, you know, then that will accelerate the purification in becoming punya, you know, pious, a punyavan. So therefore, if you can engage in 24 hours a day hearing and chanting like that, do it. I mean, it's the most purifying thing. You know? But usually we can't do it. Prabhupada says you can't do it. You know? Okay, so do it as much as you can. Pride destroys austerity, right? So you're becoming proud of being hearing and chanting all the time. It's destroying the result. But if you can do it in a simple, nice fashion, you know, yeah, then do it. You know, if you're actually, okay, I'm doing work, and doing this and that, but I'm chanting all the time. We're cooking a Sunday feast, and a lot of times you have a kirtan going, doing that, or listening to some cassette tape or something, you know. So your real business is actually listening, hearing, and chanting. The other stuff is just kind of like this to keep your senses pacified, to, you know, maybe help out, you know, with something necessary to create an environment where people can hear and chant. You know, someplace to sit down. Okay, we're doing that. But the main thing is my hearing and chanting. Yeah. And so the Prabhupada says, you know, at least one hour in the morning, 1 hour in the evening, you know, for initiated devotee. Then after that, you know, you can be hearing and chanting while you're doing everything else, you know. But if you're not doing it, then stay engaged, you know, by karma yoga. Right? And Prabhupada gave us so many activities like that. So, okay. So I want to thank everybody. A very nice program, and get your blessings. Now we're going to descend into the Sunshine Continent, quit Peru, Ecuador, Argentina, and hopefully have some very good results in the preaching programs. Hopefully we'll come back with a 45-minute video of the Mahabharata. We'll come back April 7th at 6 o'clock in the morning and stay for the weekend. Yeah, so maybe then we can have like a Mahabharata presentation. It's multimedia with dance and music and everything else like that. Hopefully it'll be okay. Okay. Oh, he also has his programs. Have a battle of the movies. Yeah. Oh, very good.
Well, maybe we'll have a matinee.
Yeah, yeah. There we go. People can't leave the temple, can't go home. That's why we'll keep. Yeah. Take my nap.